I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's December 19th, and we have a lot to talk about. And before we get into today's episode, I want to wish each of you a very happy holiday season. Whether you celebrated Hanukkah a couple of weeks ago, or you're looking forward to Christmas, or Kwanzaa, or maybe it's the winter solstice, or maybe you're just looking forward to the start of 2024, I hope you're making the most of the season and finding only good things. Fun fact that makes my holiday season a little more special, I'm celebrating a birthday today. You know, this time of year gives me an opportunity to indulge in what's become a Real Talk MS tradition. I reserve the last two episodes of the year to revisit my favorite, most compelling, most important conversations that I've had over the past year. This week, I'm revisiting the Pathways to Cures Global Summit that took place in New York last May. The National MS Society brought together the best and brightest minds in MS research, the CEOs of major MS societies, representatives from the pharmaceutical industry, and people affected by MS to update the scientific foundation of the Pathways to Cures research roadmap and set the global MS agenda for the next 3 to 5 years. The Pathways to Cures Global Summit included almost 200 attendees from 15 countries, participating in sessions dedicated to each of the three research pathways identified in the Pathways to Cures roadmap: stopping MS, restoring lost function, and ending MS forever. The meeting also included an important session that focused on different models of collaboration, as this global effort will leverage international, financial, and scientific collaboration on a scale that we haven't seen before. The President and CEO of the National MS Society, Cindy Zaghi-Boilo, opened the Pathways to Cures Global Summit, saying, "We've never been better positioned to change the world for people with MS." And from my perspective, everything that followed over the next 2 days of presentations and conversations served to underscore Cindy's observation and the high level of commitment on the part of everyone in attendance. I was able to speak with several of the top MS experts in the world at this event, and collectively, these are the conversations that have resonated with me all year long. Just before the meeting got underway, I had an opportunity to chat with the CEOs of MS societies from Denmark, Australia, Canada, the UK, and the United States. Their presence and participation reinforced the spirit of global collaboration that would become a major theme during the meeting. I wanted to get their perspectives on Pathways to Cures and their thoughts on how people living with MS might want to think about this unprecedented global research initiative. Here's what they had to say. I'm sitting here with a rather distinguished group of folks here today to talk about Pathways to Cures. Joining me is the President and CEO of the National MS Society, Cindy Zaghi-Boilo, the CEO of the Danish MS Society, Klaus Hoem, the President of MS Australia, Des Graham, the CEO of the MS Society of the UK, Nick Moberly, and the CEO of MS Canada, Dr. Pam Valentine. We are here gathered at what I have already shared with my listeners is, in my opinion, a historic event, the Pathways to Cures Global Summit. So I think it would be very, very helpful to get an overview, your perspective on this particular global research initiative. And Cindy, why don't we start with you?
It's great to be with you, as always, and we're so excited to bring the world together to talk about that next step in Pathways to Cures. We need to continue to build out the roadmap and mark the progress that we've made since the Pathways to Cures roadmap was published last March in 2022. We've made a lot of progress since then, so we are ready to take those next steps and move forward, and it takes getting together globally to do that.
Des, you have some thoughts on the initiative?
As a consumer, it's fantastic to see everybody come together under an umbrella of not only unity but trust. And I think the reason why Pathways to Cure will be successful is because there is an enormous amount of goodwill, trust, and leadership within the room.
Pam, the Pathways to Cure's research roadmap has been endorsed by 30 major MS organizations around the world. What do you see are the benefits of collaborating on a global scale in this research initiative?
I think that the Pathways to Cures has aligned all of the strategies of the organizations from around the globe. It has given us a common language to use around what we're trying to accomplish. And I think that it has built a community that is interested in the same outcomes. And for those organizations to have that level of connectedness to one another, I think is going to accelerate each of our accomplishments in achieving against that Pathways to Cures.
Nick, what does the Pathways to Cures research roadmap represent to people who are affected by MS?
Well, I think what it gives is a really powerful vision of the outcome we want to achieve, which ultimately is an end to MS. And it focuses us all on three very important themes which are required to deliver that in terms of stopping MS, restoring function, and preventing MS in the first place. I think those are powerful unifying themes. And by working together collaboratively, we stand the best chance of delivering those in a timely fashion for people affected by MS. And of course, that's a very inspiring goal for our community.
Klaus, you know the idea of stopping MS, the idea of being able to restore lost function, the idea of ending MS forever, are concepts that we've talked about for a very long time. They've all sort of come together in a cohesive way in this research roadmap. How do you see that as benefiting people who are living with MS?
I think we have it in the bold title, actually, of the strategy. We are talking about cures. And that also demonstrates that we have actually come pretty good way. I'm looking at it as we are now preparing for the final showdown with MS. We're preparing for the OK Corral, I think you could call it, in the States, and we will win.
What has you most excited about Pathways to Cures initiative?
Well, I think it is that we can actually see an end to MS. In Denmark, we have to work till we are 69. For me, that's, 13 years from now. I want to experience, you know, that we are winning this battle before I retire. And I think we will.
Pam? What excites you about Pathways to Cures?
What excites me most is what I'm going to be able to tell the person who's living with the disease, that there's a real hope that they will live beyond this disease, but that their children will also be able to be in a position to not ever have to face the disease.
Cindy, you know, in 2019, I shared with my listeners all the goings-on at the Pathways to Cures think tank in Washington, D.C. And then last year, when the research roadmap was published, we talked about it then. And here we are at this remarkable summit. What's next?
Well, whatever is next, we know that we are always stronger together. We can move faster together. As we identify very specific next steps, we're going to listen to the science for the next couple of days. And then we're going to come up with the next things that need to be done. But we know we learn from each other, we pull together, and we're stronger when we are all together. And as Pam said before, we are focused on one thing. We are focused on people affected by MS, on making sure that we find solutions for every single person who has MS for now and for the future.
I also had a chance to talk with the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy, Services, and Science Officer, Tim Cutsey, about where we are when it comes to MS care and what he sees as the work ahead that's going to deliver on the promise of the Pathways to Cures Global Research Initiative. Tim, when the MS Society CEO, Cindy Zaghi-Boilo, opened the conference this morning, she said, "We've never been better positioned to change the world for people with MS." Maybe you could talk about where we are in terms of impacting people who are living with MS.
Thanks, John. That's a super important question. And so maybe I could start with sort of reminding the audience that, you know, in 2023 marks, you know, 30 years that we've had a disease-modifying treatment for MS. And that started with one treatment in 1993. Now we have more than 30 approved treatments in the United States. Incredible progress from the standpoint of treating the disease, really changing lives. But we also know that's not enough. Treatments are not a cure. And where we stand today as a research community is that we come at this problem of curing MS from a position of strength. We have made such substantial progress in changing the trajectory for those who live with MS. But really, we won't solve MS for people who live with the disease today or those who have yet to hear the words, you have MS, until we can actually get down to how do you stop the disease as early as possible, maybe even before it happens? And importantly, how do we ensure that those who live with MS today also get back what they've lost? You know, I'd say, you know, our scientific community is organized and rallying around this. What's exciting me about what's happening in New York today is that we have also the leaders from the global MS community together focused on a coordinated approach to changing lives. We have never seen anything like this in the MS movement before, and I'm just excited by what we're going to be able to accomplish together. I also am realistic. This is not going to be easy work. This is going to be hard work. It's going to require finding new ways to treat MS, finding new ways to detect MS, finding new ways to repair what's been lost. We're setting a high bar, but you know what? I think it's worth it.
Couldn't agree more. And I think my listeners might be starting to get a little weary of hearing me refer to this meeting as historic, but like you, I truly believe it is. And in that regard, here we are at this meeting, bringing the world together. What happens when the meeting is over?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So one piece that we want to see happen is we want people, leaders, global leaders, and nearly 200 global leaders from 15 countries, from multiple organizations, researchers, all to go out with one message. We are focused on curing MS. And that's going to require commitment on the part of the scientists to focus their energies on how they collaborate together, how we address the gaps we're identifying. It's going to require the MS organizations coming together to link up our global scientific strategies in a way we have never done before. Instead of working as individual countries, we're working together to coordinate and engage with each other. We also need to let people know that there is an opportunity for everybody to contribute and be part of this movement. And then we also need to challenge the people who will develop treatments and therapies to get engaged and stay committed to MS. It's going to take all of that to get to a cure for MS, but I believe it can happen. We've made so much progress, and I think it really is up to us to take ownership and drive this.
The people who are living with MS are major stakeholders in all of this work. How can they best engage with Pathways to Cures?
We want everybody to be in the movement. So first thing you can do is visit the National MS Society's website and find Pathways to Cures. There'll be a way to get the latest information, get updated. If you see research that you can contribute to, join up. You know, there are clinical trials happening, but not just clinical trials. There are clinical studies of researchers trying to understand things like how can rehab help somebody get back what they've lost? If you're interested in contributing, you know, to genetic studies, to contribute genetic material to help us understand the cause of MS, all of these are different ways that people can contribute and be part of the solution. Being engaged is key.
Couldn't agree more. Tim Cutsey, thanks so much.
Thank you, John. Great to be with you.
Kathy Smith is a scientist who was diagnosed with MS in 2004, and Kathy shared her personal perspectives about what the Global Summit meant to her and to others living with MS. Kathy Smith is a scientist who's also living with MS. She was diagnosed in 2004, and like many people, once they are diagnosed with MS, became involved with the National MS Society. And Kathy was able to kick off the Pathways to Cures Global Summit this morning, sharing some of her own personal observations about Pathways to Cures. And I'm going to ask her to share some of those observations with all of us. So Kathy, at the risk of asking you to be slightly repetitive, can you talk a little bit about how you see the Pathways to Cures Global Summit and the entire research initiative?
It's a little over 3 years since we kicked off the Pathways to Cures effort at a global think tank. And I've been amazed by what has been able to be accomplished in that time. What has struck me then and strikes me now is that we're actually adding the word cure to our vocabulary. And I think that conventional wisdom not so long ago was that there is no cure for MS. And so the fact that we have the courage to add cure to our lexicon, and we have the will to make it happen.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. When I first heard the word cure being added to the conversation at the National MS Society, I realized it was a major step forward. And I think this meeting is sort of the next evolutionary step, taking something that was conceptual mm-hmm. from the think tank in 2019 right. to something that became a published paper about a year ago. And now here we are, sort of positioned to launch. I liked what the MS Society CEO Cindy Zaghi-Boilo said this morning when she said, "We've never been better positioned to change the world for people with MS." That's just a profound statement. So yeah. I'll almost ask you to take off your scientist hat for a moment. Simply as somebody who's living with MS, how do you perceive this evolution of concept to here we are at the launching pad?
Yeah. The fact that we're targeting our questions and targeting our efforts is great and will produce results. I think that's clear. But I think that the other thing about Pathways to Cures that's so important is that there's a cure in there for everyone. It doesn't matter whether you've just been diagnosed or you're down a track of secondary progressive MS. There are cures being planned and hopefully achieved for everyone.
I like something you said this morning. You said every person in the world who lives with MS dreams of having a cure for their MS.
Yeah.
And this meeting that we're at really speaks to that exact sentiment, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it does. And I think where else can you find that? There are lots of very targeted efforts through the National MS Society and others. So Progressive MS was one, but then, it includes and then it excludes some, but this is for everyone.
It is. And when we talk about for everyone, it's what's impressed me already today, and we're really just through the first half of the first day, is I'm seeing the paradigm shift in how we are looking at or talking about MS. For the longest time, we used to think MS starts the day you're diagnosed. Mm-hmm. But we've heard presentations this morning about how do we stop MS before anyone gets a symptom, let alone a diagnosis?
Yeah.
How do we intervene so early that that person may never experience a symptom?
Right.
And then the very next presentation reminded us about the specific challenges associated with aging with MS. You know, I've heard neurologists say to me, when I have an older patient who's living with MS and I realize their 25-foot walk is slower than it was a year ago, I really have to understand, is that their MS or is that just natural aging? Right. We walk a little slower, right? So I think the fact that we are now looking at such a broad timeline from pre-clinical symptoms through the aging process really underscores what you said. This is addressing MS no matter where you are in your journey.
Yeah. And even if you've not even been diagnosed yet, there's a solution being proposed for that, because, you know, hopefully, you know, a cure would include you will never be diagnosed with MS, which would be the ultimate goal, I see.
Absolutely. It may not technically qualify as curing MS, but boy, if you never experience a single symptom, I think most people could live with that.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy Smith, thanks for adding your insights and wisdom to the meeting today. And thanks so much for taking a minute to talk with me.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure.
After a discussion on the current landscape of MS research investments, Dr. Anne-Katrin Propstel from the University of Basel in Switzerland introduced a session devoted to stopping MS. After this session, I had a chance to talk with Dr. Propstel. I'm talking with Dr. Anne-Katrin Propstel from the University of Basel in Switzerland. And Dr. Propstel led today's session on stopping MS. When you think about that, it's almost mind-boggling a little bit that is even a topic, let alone one of the key focus of the Pathways to Cures research roadmap. What do you think of when you think of stopping MS?
I think stopping MS is both the most advanced we have gotten in MS research, but it's still also the biggest challenge we face. So if you think about stopping MS, it really starts from thinking about stopping the disease as early as subclinical disease activity to stopping very late stages of the disease. And I think what it necessitates, and this is the exciting part where I think we have made tremendous advancements over the past years on multiple levels, is that we have gained fundamental understanding of the malfunction of the immune system in patients with MS. What's different from healthy controls, that then has facilitated the development of novel therapeutic strategies. On the other hand, we have also run clinical trial for certain reasons with certain medications that have turned out to be very successful, such as anti-CD20. But in the end, then by studying these clinical trial data and the results, so basically the other way around, we have figured out that probably the mode of action that we thought they're going to work on is completely different. So I think it kind of takes two perspectives on working on that, right? One is a fundamental research, and the other one's also learning from clinical trials that certain drugs may act differently from what we anticipated them to do. But it's equally valid. And I think this joint effort will then bring us closer to further developing the Stop MS efforts and eventually get us closer to a cure for MS.
One of the things I appreciate when we talk about stopping MS is we talk about it throughout the various stages along the lifespan of the patient and the lifespan, the timeline of the disease itself. Today, I've seen that timeline or that chronology appropriately expanded to include that period of time before someone is even symptomatic, someone who may not have any reason to even be seen by a neurologist, but they get a headache or something. And so they're referred, and it turns out that they may have signs that they could develop MS at that stage, what we call radiologically isolated syndrome. And today we talked about creating a criteria for stopping MS even at that stage, before someone actually develops their very first MS symptom. While that may not classically qualify as a cure, I think everybody who's living with MS would be willing to live with that. And on the other hand, we've seen the timeline expanded to include the complexities and the different understanding that needs to be applied when you talk about aging with MS, something that also is gaining increased focus in the research community. So we really are talking about something for everyone at every stage of their MS journey.
Correct. And I think this actually has two dimensions. One is MS is a disease of the lifespan, so it affects people at different ages. So it can affect children and it can affect adults. And with affect here, I mean disease manifestation when we, you know, have it first captured clinically. And then, of course, then comes to the second point that you mentioned, is that people that are now in immune modulatory therapies get older and older. So we'll have novel challenges and necessity for understanding as the immune system also then changes with age. And so the interaction with disease modifying therapies will have to study. This is kind of one lifespan. And the other span is you have mentioned is that we now know that MS starts years before we actually, you know, make the diagnosis. And this has become clear that there's a prodromal phase of MS that can start with very unspecific syndromes. So there's very interesting data from cohorts where you can see that patients years before their formal MS diagnosis have shown up more frequently to their family doctor with unspecific syndromes. And I think one of the biggest and exciting advancements we have made now that we are trying to carve out biomarkers that then help us also determine the risk, you know, if somebody with a headache just has an unspecific headache or maybe at risk to develop MS. And one of these biomarkers can be, for example, neurofilament light chain, which is a biomarker in the blood that measures certain brain protein that can be elevated in patients that are at risk. Also certain imaging marker where you can see that if you see a lesion in a brain of a healthy, to date, healthy individual without symptoms is more prone to the development of a clinically manifest multiple sclerosis versus what we call an unspecific lesion. So, for example, certain MRI signs like such as central vein will help us navigate that. And of course, now the challenge is to integrate all these biomarkers we have on different levels and bringing together with early symptoms that precede clinical manifestation of the disease. And this is really important because now we have very good also clinical trial data that show the earlier we treat the patients, even by just having what we call radiological isolated syndrome, so no clinical manifestation, protects them on the long run from neuronal damage.
One of the things that really sets the Pathways to Cures initiative apart is its focus on global collaboration and how important that collaboration is. I've seen that watching the International Progressive MS Alliance do its work, and I've seen the value and benefit of that global collaboration. But what came up in the discussion today was a real concern about the limitations of collaborating because of certain privacy laws and everything. Can you talk a little bit about how those obstacles create those limitations and what patients can do to involve themselves in perhaps resolving some of that?
Yeah, you're bringing up an important point out of today's discussion, which I think is indeed one of the big obstacles that has come out of our efforts to really join global efforts in tackling MS. And so this creates necessity to share data across country, across clinical cohorts, which brings basically legal and also ethical issues. And these really need to be addressed because currently they're big obstacles in terms of sharing data from different cohorts, which is very valuable because I think by this joint team efforts around the globe, we'll get much closer and much faster to better understanding of MS. And so I think what this really needs is global initiatives of us thinking about how we can safely share patient data. And I thought one of the great things about the meeting is here that it brings together governmental people as well as caregivers, patients, and also the healthcare providers, because we can have the different perspectives. And I found it very valuable that the patients in the room actually stated that they would be happy to share their data, right? So it's not the obstacle, and Brenda and Ben will also alluded to that. It's really not mainly the patients that are there. I think these are basically legal obstacles that we kind of have to look at how we can safely come up with novel approaches to share the data. And it's actually not so easy because, for example, it's about anonymizing and de-anonymizing MRIs. And as you know, even if an MRI doesn't have a name, you can now still, by, you know, face reconstruction, basically rebuild the whole basic individual just from the images, which is, of course, only due now to technological advances. And then, of course, if you share immunological data, which have genetic signatures, you know, this then allows you to get a lot of information on the patient. So I was quite pleased to hear very consistently from patients that they would be happy to share that. So I think now it's to us and the respective institution to come up with laws that allow flexibility, but also ensure safety to work together and share these data sets to maximize basically harnessing the data and integrating the knowledge we have.
Well, I think that as we remind our legislators across all the countries around the world, because privacy is an issue that's really global as well, I think when we remind them that even Facebook gives an individual the right to determine how private they want to be and how much they wish to share, hopefully they'll recognize that patients who are volunteering for a clinical trial in order to find cures for a chronic illness might be happy to share their medical data and healthcare data with researchers in a confidential manner. Seems a lot safer than Facebook. Hopefully our legislators will catch on.
Agreed. And I think that comment that was made in the session today that, you know, patients are willing to share more data on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram than they do in our clinical study due to this legislative restrictions, I think this brings it to the point. So I think there's willingness from the patient. They would be happy to share the data if it helps them, you know, to get a better understanding of their disease. So now it's to us and the legislative bodies to come up with solutions that address that.
Well, Dr. Anne-Catherine Propstel, thank you for leading a fascinating session earlier today, and thanks so much for stopping by to talk with me.
Thanks, John. It was a pleasure.
I also spoke with Dr. Naila Makami about detecting MS early, before someone even experiences a single symptom. We're speaking with Dr. Naila Makami from the Yale School of Medicine, and Dr. Makami gave a presentation on early detection of MS. And in this case, the focus was on what's known as a prodromal phase of MS. It's something we talk about often on the podcast. So I'm glad you're here to enlighten us a bit about that. First question, when we're talking about detecting MS before somebody really experiences the typical symptoms associated with MS, how do we do that? How do we detect early MS?
I think that's the question of the day. I think there are going to be a variety of factors that contribute to our ability to detect MS early. There may be some clinical features, for instance, fatigue, anemia, anxiety, depression, have all been found more commonly in people with MS in the 5 years before they were diagnosed as compared to other healthy people who are controls. However, some of those symptoms are very nonspecific. So the question is, how do we add specificity and get to the people who really do have these earliest possible stages? I think imaging is a big help here. We've, for instance, identified people who have imaging findings consistent with MS much before they ever develop clinical symptoms. This has been termed radiologically isolated syndrome. And I think we're going to have to combine clinical features with things that have added specificity, such as imaging, novel imaging markers, other biomarkers that are discovered or still have yet to be discovered. And I think it's really going to be a combination of things that allows us to determine with some certainty, it might not be perfect, but with some certainty, which people are in the earliest possible stages of MS.
So we start to identify or codify those risk factors. We start to be able to identify someone who may be experiencing some of that and some of the tools that are available to make those kinds of determinations. How do we combine all of that into the criteria for going ahead and actually being able to identify and proactively treat MS?
I think there are a couple of different questions there. The first is, how do we combine some of these things into something like a risk score? I think step one is identifying what factors we might want to include. And we may not have all of the information for every individual. Not everyone might have an MRI or have a certain blood marker drawn or have known exposures to certain things such as Epstein-Barr virus. But I think for people where we have some of these factors, once we identify which ones we're will be helpful and to include in such a risk score. We then have to take those and figure out what is their magnitude of their association, how predictive are they, and then start to combine the factor being present or absent with the magnitude of its risk score, add them all up at the end and get a risk score, a probability score. And the goal, because there's a lot of work to be done here, this is still in very early stages, is to be able at the individual level to advise someone. You have an 80% chance of having early or prodromal multiple sclerosis. To another person, you have a 10% chance, for instance, of having early or prodromal multiple sclerosis. And once we are able to get to that stage where we can give someone an individualized probability, and as I said, I think there is still a lot of work to be done before we get to that stage, then maybe we can start to set cutoffs in consultation with our patients, because this might vary at an individual level, as to when we might want to intervene or at least offer participation, for instance, in an intervention study or clinical trial.
Dr. Mirkani, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Daniel Antoneda is an associate professor of neurology and medicine at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine at Case Western Reserve University and a clinician researcher at the Cleveland Clinic Neurological Institute's Mellon Center for Multiple Sclerosis. Among his research activities, Dr. Antoneda is the lead principal investigator for DELIVER-MS, a large international multi-center study that's analyzing the benefits of treating MS by starting someone on a very safe, moderately effective disease-modifying therapy, and then only escalating to a stronger therapy when the current therapy seems to no longer be working, versus treating MS by starting someone on a more powerful, high-efficacy disease-modifying therapy. I had a chance to ask Dr. Antoneda how someone who's living with MS should be thinking about the Pathways to Cures initiative. We're talking with neurologist Dr. Daniel Antoneda from the Cleveland Clinic. And Daniel, you know, this has been talked about as convening the world to take us to the next evolutionary stage of the Pathways to Cures research initiative. Let me ask you, how should someone who's living with MS think about pathways to cures?
Yeah, so thanks so much, John, for the opportunity to talk to you. And also, it's really great being here and being able to share with, you know, all the stakeholders, the individuals, people with MS, and a lot of our research collaborators and scientists at this meeting. So I think, you know, from, you know, a person living with MS, the perspective of what this meeting means is, you know, I think the first thing we try to recognize is the fact that we've come a long way. And MS is now a treatable disease. And what we're trying to do is trying to figure out what's the parts of MS that we can't treat. And then second, how can we stop the disease altogether? And I think that these questions are things that you have to propose with a big idea in mind, really trying to change and revolutionize what we're doing. So take things to the next level. I think that when we think about getting research scientists together in a room, sometimes we think about a dry meeting that might be, you know, entangled with, like, you know, some science issues. But the truth is that a lot of what happens at this meeting is the voice of people with MS. What do we need to do differently so that we can actually eradicate the disease completely? And I think that really, we need, you know, the voice of individuals with MS to remind us that we have to be bold in our questions. We have to try to answer these problems with, you know, all the players in mind. So it's really a different approach to how, you know, research normally is conducted, which is normally people sit down and decide, oh, I'm going to study this or I'm going to study that. I'm going to publish a paper on this. Here, it's not about that. It's really about how can we transform the field? How can we make living with MS better for all of those who are affected by it, and how can we prevent it from occurring altogether?
Well, I think to your point, here we are halfway through the first day of the meeting. And the first part of the day was a presentation on exactly how people affected by MS get integrated into the research process, really fully engaged as opposed to being data points. And then the next conversation was about stopping MS. And what impressed me is the focus was not only on stopping MS for people who have been diagnosed and are somewhere along the typical MS journey that we tend to think about, but stopping MS among people who haven't been diagnosed, who actually have not experienced a single symptom yet, that prodromal phase of MS. Fascinating conversation, a really fascinating kind of focus. It expands that timeline where we typically think your MS journey begins on your day of diagnosis. Well, I think that certainly is a milestone that every patient remembers to the minute, if not the second, when that occurs. But now we're seeing that efforts are being made to intervene, so maybe you don't experience that day.
Yeah, that's correct. I was just asked what does a cure mean to me? And to me, a cure means that I don't have to diagnose anymore MS patients. So we avoid that, that experience altogether. And I think that's something that, with certain developments in the field, I think the first thing we need to do is identify who are the people who are at risk of developing MS, right? Even if they haven't developed it yet, first we need to identify them. And then we need to develop the strategies so that we can actually do something to prevent the disease from occurring altogether.
Well, Dr. Daniel Antoneta, thanks for all you do every day to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for stopping by to talk with me.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was a pleasure as always.
At the Global Summit, I had the chance to connect with my friend, Dr. Mitzi Joy Williams. Dr. Williams is a clinician researcher who has focused her research on identifying disparities in MS care among historically underserved populations. One theme that was part of all the conversations at the summit was that the goals of the initiative, the cures that would come out of this extraordinary global effort, had to be made available to everyone living with MS. I asked Dr. Williams what the word cure meant to her, and we talked about the importance of ensuring that the Pathways to Cures initiative doesn't leave anyone behind. You've probably already heard me say that the MS Society has convened the best and the brightest to be attending Pathways to Cures Global Summit. I would say my next guest, Dr. Mitzi Joy Williams, completely defines what the best and the brightest really means in MS research as well as clinical work. Dr. Williams, how should someone who's living with MS think about Pathways to Cures?
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. This is so exciting. Just the fact that we are now talking about looking at ways to cure MS. I think for a person living with MS, I think it's important to recognize that there are still some steps that need to be taken, some collaborative efforts that need to be done with summits like this to really better understand MS across different populations. But I think the exciting piece is that we're working towards that and that there are, multiple ways that we're looking at trying to end MS as well as trying to restore function. And so I think that's the exciting piece, right, is that now this is part of the conversation where it was not part of the conversation even 10 years ago.
As you mentioned, the idea of cures is a new part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. What does a cure mean to you?
Yeah, so a cure can mean different things, right? I think at this stage of the game, a cure to me as a clinician would mean I catch someone very early in their MS and I'm able to stop their MS in its tracks. I think that there are, successful examples of this that I've seen in clinical practice when we're able to get a person on the right treatment for them. They often do very well. So my patients are now very functional. They're raising their kids. They're getting their PhDs and, remaining employed. So for me, that's a cure. I mean, ultimately, I think in the grand scheme of things, a cure is being able to identify people before they have symptoms, when they're at that risk factor stage, and to be able to stop disease progression at that point.
You know, a key area of your research has focused on identifying disparities in MS care, looking at everything from access to care to quality of care affecting historically underserved communities.
Yeah.
How do you process the goals of the Pathways to Cures initiative to stop MS in its tracks, restore lost function, and end MS forever? How do you process those goals as they relate to members of minority communities in light of the disparities that you've identified in your work?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. So one of the things that we definitely, I think, need a little bit more emphasis on is diversity, right? So sometimes when you get in a global setting where, for instance, in certain parts of the world, you don't have as many underrepresented populations, you don't have the same history of disparities like we have here in the States, it can kind of get lost in the sauce, so to speak, that conversation. But I think that, you know, in order to really find a cure for MS, everyone has to be included in that solution. You know, for instance, you know, there are not a lot of people from the continent of Africa as a part of this meeting, right? So we're missing a whole continent. And I think that we have to begin to reconcile those things. You know, certainly we have to continue to move the research forward, but we also have to kind of take that pause to say, okay, what are we missing and how do we really make this inclusive of everyone in the world who has multiple sclerosis? And I think we have a little ways to go where that's concerned.
Probably do, but I think focusing on the fact that that is a necessary part of this effort is so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me.
Thank you so much for inviting me, John. Always a pleasure.
Throughout this meeting, there was a clearly stated intention of putting people affected by MS at the heart of this global research initiative. It was an understanding that people affected by MS could contribute more than just data, enriching the work by involving them in every step of the research process. And as someone affected by MS, it was gratifying to see this approach being baked into all of the work that would follow this global summit. And speaking of that work, just a couple of weeks ago, the National MS Society announced a $4.4 million investment in new multi-year MS research projects as part of the Society's ongoing strategy to align the global MS research community around the most promising areas outlined in the Pathways to Cures research roadmap. These projects include 5 new research grants targeting recovery of lost function for people with MS, and 9 pilot projects that focus on understanding the role of viruses such as the Epstein-Barr virus in MS. This investment is just part of the National MS Society's $30 million annual investment to support more than 200 new and ongoing research studies around the world. And that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society, and you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/329. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and happy holidays.